From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. It's been a slow and sometimes arduous climb, but more and more women in our community, state, and nation are reaching the highest echelons of leadership. And while this is a fairly new dynamic, an older institution can claim at least partial credit for it, the Girl Scouts. While their cookie sales are what most of us see every year, the organization is really focused on developing leadership skills for girls and young women. Today on the show, you'll meet two such aspiring leader scouts and learn what they have learned by being Girl Scouts and also what they are doing to help make our community a better place. Then, at the end of the show, we'll check in with our reporter about some of the big takeaways from Tuesday's election results. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Kids today are much busier than I ever was at their age, but as you'll see from my guests today, Girl Scouts, especially those who've reached the highest level of scouting, lead incredibly busy and very productive lives as they both improve themselves and the community. Kylie Holton, a member of Girl Scouts Troop 20315, and Ella Killingsworth, a member of Troop 11527, really appreciate you both coming into the studio. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Ella, talk about the skills that Girl Scouts provided to you. Did kind of understanding how it would set you up for leadership training, did that come later?
It absolutely came later, and I'm so grateful that it did. I think that Girl Scouts has been really the most unique like space and organization I've ever been a part of, because it allows for me to kind of practice the skills that I need in the more like success-based parts of my life in a space that is, you know, you get badges in Girl Scouts for trying, for experimenting, right? Like, you don't have to successfully carve the duck out of soap. You just have to try. And so I think that having that safe space to like a rehearsal for all the other aspects of my life and all the other leadership positions I've taken on in my life was really just such a valuable, and I'm so grateful for the experience that it's kind of, it's granted me to be able to just have like a rehearsal space, to put it in some of those theater terms.
Sure. Kylie, you talked about very age diverse in your troop. Are you kind of a mentor to the younger folks? And did you sort of learn that through the Girl Scouts experience?
Yeah, so I joined Girl Scouts again when I was in the fourth grade. So I was a Brownie Girl Scout at the time. And we've had all the way from Daisies until Ambassadors the entire time that I've been a part of the troop. And when I was younger, I remember, you know, I saw the older girls some, but I didn't see them a lot. You know, high schoolers were all very busy, but as I've grown up, I remember thinking to myself like, oh my gosh, those mystical, magical older girls that I never ever see. So I've made a point to try and interact a lot with our younger girls, because it's really building those connections that encourages girls to stay in Girl Scouts. If they feel like nobody wants them there, or they feel like it's uncool and they're getting external pressures to leave, then they're not gonna wanna stay. But if they have older girls and girls around them that are like, no, this is awesome, like, we enjoy having you here, we think you should stay, you're learning a lot, it's cool, then that allows them to believe that they are wanted in the Girl Scout organization and that it's important for them to be there. And so I try to spend as much time with the younger girls as I can. We went to yurt camping just a couple weeks ago where our cadet Girl Scouts were working on their field games badge. So they had to present a bunch of different field games to our Brownie and Junior Girl Scouts, and then us as ambassadors came just for funsies, because we like camping. We were like, sure, we'll come and do field games.
Okay, all right, that sounds cool. Let me reintroduce you both to the audience. We're talking to two local Girl Scouts in our community, Kylie Holton and Ella Killingsworth. Ella, for someone my age, we realize young people are so much busier than we were at your age. How do you fit it all in? I imagine you're quite busy with school and other activities. This is something that is quite the add-on to your daily life, isn't it?
Yeah, so that brings me to a really, really important point about just like a thanks to my troop leaders. So as we got older in Girl Scouts, right, and our schedule started to fill up with school, other activities, sports, you know, student government, all these other things, my troop leaders really wanted us to stay in Girl Scouts. And so they made Girl Scouts kind of fill the holes that there were in our schedule instead of being another demand on the system.
Okay.
Right? So they made it so we could earn leadership awards and badges for things that we were already doing. And they just encouraged us to, you know, schedule the meetings around when we were available so that it kind of a slower and more consistent effort rather than just another, you know, add on to the busyness.
Okay.
Was really important.
Okay. And Kylie, how do you navigate it?
Yeah, a lot of the same, like Ella mentioned, my troop leader always made it a priority that, you know, we're going to pick dates that people can come to. If people can't come, we're going to reschedule. My troop had a big trip last summer. So after that, we were looking at me and another girl going to our senior years, two other girls going to their junior years. It was like, what's the best night out of all of them? So we end up doing Wednesday night and like 7 to 9 p.m. So it's a late commitment for my troop leader, and we just appreciate her flexibility around it. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I've noticed is, you know, I live in Junction City, a small town and small high school, so you really get to do whatever you want. Hmm. I mean, we don't cut from the sports teams. Anybody can be part of the theater department. You can do every single club if you want to. Nobody's telling you you can't.
Okay.
Because there's, you know, everybody needs to do everything. We want to have these activities. Sure. And so something that I've had to focus on is really prioritizing. You know, I'm a three-sport athlete. I do student government. I do Girl Scouts. I do National Honor Society. Out of all of the things that I could be doing, though, those are the ones that I've decided are the most important. So prioritizing is something that I've learned a lot throughout high school, how to decide that, yeah, Girl Scouts means a lot to me, and I put so much time and effort into it, and I think it will really help me in the future. And so I'm going to make that a priority to get to as many meetings as I can.
Okay. And in addition to all that, being Girl Scouts, you're also, I mean, you've kind of ascended to a whole nother level. And you're an ambassador, like you talked about. Kylie, I'm going to stick with you because you're also working on this Gold Award project. What is that? And then talk about specifically what you're doing.
Yeah, so the Gold Award Project is an individual take action project where a Girl Scout has to identify a problem that is relevant to not only her community, but also globally. Mm-hmm. And then she has to identify the problem, create a solution, implement the solution, and ensure that the solution is sustainable. So it's not necessarily just a one-time project. It has to have impact beyond her as she exits the Girl Scouting organization.
Okay.
For my Gold Award project, when I started looking at different topics, I'm currently a lifeguard and a swim instructor, so water safety is a big thing to me. And I was doing some research, and I learned that about 236,000 people die globally every single year from drowning.
Hmm.
And for reference, the population of Boise, Idaho is 239,000 people. So that is like, it just puts it all in perspective. Like a whole city of Boise dies every year from something that could be relatively preventable. You know, mm-hmm. drowning is not necessarily an illness internal of your body or something.
Sure.
It's something that we know how to prevent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so doing more research, we have a lot of safety measures in pools. We've got lifeguards, we have swim lessons, we've got life jackets readily available. People are always watching the pool, but a lot of the population, especially those in countries where the swimming pool system isn't quite developed, spends time in open water. And we don't have nearly anything near what we have for pools for open water. We don't have lifeguards in open water. We don't have swim lessons for open water. None of that. And when looking into the reasons why people weren't taking open water safety courses, in Oregon, open water feels so natural to us. It's everywhere.
Hmm.
But as you get further into the middle of the United States or even in some other countries, a lot of people don't have access to open water.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the ocean. It's their first time ever seeing it at 25 years old, right? Whereas in Oregon, it's like, oh, we've been to the ocean a bunch. And so pools are incredibly more prevalent across the United States in comparison to open water, but open water is still used rather regularly. And so I wanted to create a safety curriculum that was accessible, low cost, and could use resources that people already had. And so that's what I did. I created an open water safety curriculum that could be taught from the comforts of a pool setting. It has two different parts. The first part is a dry land portion that specifically discusses open water hazards. So we talk about the importance of life jackets and then different hazards found in oceans, rivers, and lakes. And then the second part is in the pool, and it allows the people to go over some different safety skills, such as how to make a flotation device out of your jeans, how to properly fit a life jacket on another person, how to do a reach and throw technique if there's somebody in the water who needs to be rescued, because you don't want to put yourself in danger trying to rescue somebody else.
Sure. Great. Well, so Ella, talk about your project.
Thank you. So my project really combines two of my just lifelong passions, my passion for theater and then my passion for like equity and accessibility. So My kind of final product that I made for my Gold Award project is a website called Minority Voices in Youth Theater. And it kind of acts as a guidebook. And if you scroll through the website, you'll see a bunch of plays that are written by authors and kind of feature voices that are typically left out of the typical theater canon. Okay. I found that my experience in youth theater is a lot of times youth theater directors, and I don't blame them, are so insanely busy, right? They're not only trying to pick a season, they're trying to maybe sort out interpersonal dynamics, especially if they're also a school teacher, right?
Okay.
So they're so busy, and so when they're picking their season, they're going to turn to something that they have more... they have knowledge of, or they have more accessibility to, right? So my website kind of aimed to make these works that tell a more broad range of stories, more easily bookmarkable is kind of the term that I like to use, you know, reducing, you know, the kind of trying to increase rather ease of access.
Okay.
And making them easier to find. And through my partnership with, the Oregon Thespians organization, I was able to kind of share and launch this website with thespians all over Oregon. And recently, my friends in Ashland are using this website to find a play for their season next year, which I'm so incredibly happy about.
The Shakespeare Festival?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's very cool. Very cool.
My AP Lit class went to the Shakespeare Festival a couple weeks ago.
It's legendary. Last question for each of you. You know, especially for folks who maybe just don't know much about Girl Scouts. If there's sort of, I don't know, one thing that most exemplifies what scouting has meant for you, and we'll start with you, Kylie.
At the end of the Girl Scout law, it says be a sister to every Girl Scout. And the Girl Scout law talks about a lot of other things that we as Girl Scouts try to hold true, and you know, that's our value system. But I think, especially my reasoning for joining Girl Scouts and the friendships I've been able to make and the connections, trying to be a sister or be a friend to everybody you come across. There's a lot of different people in this world. And there's a lot of different people, even in my town, who I have a lot of disagreements with. But what I've noticed is if you can approach everybody with kindness, even though you understand that maybe you don't agree with them, they don't agree with you, you guys aren't on the best terms, being a sister to every Girl Scout and being a friend to every person, it just... it helps you approach every situation with a good mindset, and it prevents unnecessary conflict. And so that's something that I'm not perfect at it, but by all means, you know, I'm pretty argumentative, but I try to do that. When I approach a new situation, I approach a new person, trying to approach them with kindness and love in my heart instead of making automatic judgments or assumptions about them. And that's just what's been like the most Girl Scouty thing to me, is trying to be a sister to everyone and be a friend to every person.
Okay. Ella, last word to you.
Yeah, so I think the kind of phrase that really just is what scouting is about for me is having like a safety net or a safe place to land. Like, you get to grow in yourself, you get to do all these other things, but at the end of the day, scouting and Girl Scouts and the community and the people that you meet and build in Girl Scouts, they're always gonna be there for you, to support you. So, you know, that's how I've been able to do all this, right? Knowing that my community in Girl Scouts always has my back. And that's kind of where that, you know, being a sister to every Girl Scout comes in, right? That strong community gives you the safety and the confidence to know that you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Okay. They are Kylie Holton and Ella Killingsworth, two local Girl Scouts. Remember those names as they continue in their leadership journey. Really appreciate you coming in and talking with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
I spoke with Rebecca Hanson-White yesterday, right after Tuesday's election, and she joins me now to break down some of the most important results from our region. Rebecca Hanson-White, reporter for us here at KLCC. Rebecca, always great to see you.
Always great to be here.
Yeah. So you had a busy night covering the election and letting folks know you're feeling under the weather. So you're a gamer. You're here even after all the late nights that you had to put up with. So let's talk about maybe the race that is of importance because it is a federal office. Talk about District 4.
Yeah, so we have our incumbent. She's seeking a third term, Democratic Congresswoman Val Hoyle. And so for the Democratic primary, she came in first last night with like 78%. percent, you know, like basically three quarters of the district voted for her in the preliminary results. So there's still more numbers coming in. And her opponent, Melissa Byrd, who's from Corvallis, we had a KLCC reporter at her election party last night.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up conceding later in the night. I don't think she's endorsed Hoyle yet, but she did concede. So that's kind of how that race turned out. On the Republican side, they also had a primary last night as well. Monique Despain won, came in first with more than 80% of the vote. She beat someone from Eugene, Stefan Streck, who you may recognize. He previously ran for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is the presumptive, with preliminary results, Republican nominee right now. And they'll, if that the results hold, they'll have a rematch in November.
Exactly. That was a fairly contentious race. I mean, so this is now Hoyle's third term. I think the more they're in office, chances are the more they can be returned to office. But what were some of the things that Hoyle said, you know, she's looking forward to if she wins this next term?
Yeah, so I just connected with her this morning about the results, and I think she describes herself as a workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that on the path to November for this rematch, she seems really focused on affordability.
Hmm.
And seems really focused on addressing the policy decisions affecting affordability, as well as the Iran war, all of those policies kind of unilaterally coming down from the Trump administration.
Sure. In fact, I think you even have a clip, some sound when you talk to her. Let's play that now.
This is a district that has a lot of people that are being hurt by the increase in costs, by a president who said he was running to bring down costs and started a war where we're spending over $2 billion a day. In an unauthorized, immoral war that is increasing the price of gas and everything around us. So fundamentally, when I talk to people, and I talk to a lot of people through the district, they're really worried about just being able to afford to put gas in their car, to pay rent, to, you know, feed their kids.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like you said, we've got a rematch coming up. I mean, Hoyle has a lot going for her. But of course, Despain ran a very spirited campaign last time.
Yeah. So Monique Despain, she is a little bit about her. She's an Air Force veteran. She's a former military warrior or military lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
If it's called a JAG officer.
Mm-hmm. And Judge Advocate General. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so she's very focused on holding Val Hoyle accountable, in her words, for, you know, some of the decisions that she made while she was a labor commissioner. And if you remember, several months ago, Val Hoyle was pinged for a violation of the Stock Act, which you can read that coverage, and she kind of had an explanation for what happened there. And so she's really focused on highlighting those issues. But Monique Despain has always been very focused on public safety and immigration issues as well.
Okay. You also covered the county commission races. Talk about that.
Yeah. So there may be a potential shakeup on the county commission. It's a little early to tell. So there are two incumbents that are trailing right now. So let's start with East Lane. So that's Heather Buck is the incumbent. And Heather Buck is facing Jake Pelroy. So he has worked for a lot of conservative campaigns. If you look in North Star, his name is all over the place for the last several years. He has also been very opposed to this garbage project. That's part of why he ran for office, this waste sorting facility that he thinks is too expensive and unnecessary, which Buck supported. So he was leading on election night, actually, with 49% to her 45%. And there is a third candidate that got less than 5%. And so that could be headed to a runoff if in the next couple rounds of results, if he isn't able to get 50% plus one, then that could be headed towards November. If he does in the next couple rounds, then that race will be over.
Okay.
And she has not quite conceded yet. She put out a statement this morning kind of saying she's waiting for the results. She'll respect kind of what the outcome is. and is very thankful for people who supported her. And Jake Pelroy last night, you know, what he was saying was he was optimistically hopeful.
Okay.
In Springfield, a potential bigger upset. Sean Van Gordon, the mayor of Springfield, who challenged incumbent David Lovell, was in the lead last night with the first round of results. He did hit that 50%, but there are, you know, more votes to count. And he was very much kind of on the campaign trail saying, I'm going to calm the waters. I'm going to focus on solving regional problems and bringing people together. And David Lovell has had run into some controversy lately.
That you've covered.
Yes, with some hostile interactions with county employees and investigations and ethics, which you can, you know, hear his side of the story also if you go and look up our coverage.
Sure.
So that race, there's still results to come in. You know, it's possible that if things change, maybe it could end up in November, but it also could very much end here in May as well.
Okay. Rebecca, going back to Hoyle. Did in your coverage, in talks with her, did she express optimism about the midterms? There's a lot of people who feel like the Democrats might do well in the midterms, which historically the party out of power tends to do. I didn't know if Hoyle made any comments to you about being part of perhaps a blue wave in November.
She did seem hopeful, and I think, you know, she's said something along the lines of, I'm going to do my part to hold on to my seat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully I think she wants to be a part of a blue wave that will, you know, use Congress, the tools that Congress has to pursue accountability against the Trump administration on, you know, the Iran war and other issues that they've had a hard time in their current majority or minority being able to get done.
Okay. Rebecca Hanson-White, go have some chicken soup. Feel better. Thank you so much for your coverage.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, for Memorial Day, we'll be bringing you Grace Under Fire, a special radio documentary which features an Army Ranger and decorated veteran sharing inspiring stories from his remarkable combat experiences in Vietnam. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.